Welcome to another episode of the Lemonade Podcast. This is your host, Steph I Will, aka Stephanie, aka Misty Nice Twist Out, aka somebody who has a lot to kind of say today. So I just want to jump right into comics. There's a ton of other stuff going on, but I kind of just want to jump right into this. So if you are, maybe you've seen this, maybe you haven't, or maybe you have seen it and just didn't think anything of it, but Extraordinary X-Men 20 just came out this past Wednesday. That would be March 22nd. So in this comic, the very first page, it features a back shot of Storm. And I've seen this panel at first on Twitter before I actually got a chance to read the actual issue. And of course, I can't remember the Twitter handle exactly, but her name is Rosie, and, you know, she had a very poignant point about this panel and what the issue kind of was with it, which was the, you know, the continued hypersexualization of Black women in comics. Something that you've heard me talk about before, and also you listen to Misty Knight's Uninformed Afro. Jamie and I talk about that a lot, especially when we get to Misty Knight, because that is just something that is just very rampant. That happens a lot when she's drawn. Example, go read Daughters of the Dragon, because all of that artwork is, it gets a little Pornhub-ish. But anyways, so back to Extraordinary X-Men number 20. So in this issue, page one panel, you have a back shot of Storm, and she is pretty much standing with her back to us, and she's looking over everyone and everything because X-Men are ready to leave X-Haven. They can leave now. And we're treated to a Storm that, one, you probably wouldn't even necessarily know that it was her because she damn near looks white. Only way you can kind of tell is by way of the hair. And secondly, we're treated to a fat ass in X-Men yoga pants, which, hey, Storm is slugging. And, you know, that can't be helped. But the thing is that the artist is not a Black woman. I'm not saying that only Black women can draw Black women, but so that's not there. And then also, for what is going on in this panel, that doesn't really lend to the story at all. In fact, it takes away from it, because now I'm just trying to figure out, like, you know, like, I've seen Storm drawn before, exuding all the sexuality in the world, but it's still, I don't know, it just came off differently. And in this particular panel, it just feels out of place, and it's taken away from the panel itself, because, you know, Storm is reflecting that now things are not necessarily back to normal for the X-Men, but, you know, they can leave X-Haven, they can go back to Earth. And it's a very somber moment for her. She's thinking about Professor Xavier. Like, it's a very somber moment, and it just takes away from it, in my opinion. And I just feel like this is me as a comic reader all the time, where I'm reading, especially when I'm reading from the big two, I always have moments where the art is taking me out of it a little bit, because either the woman has been, her hair is drawn funky, or, you know, she's four shades lighter than she normally is. And there's just always some extra going on. The consistency is just never really there. So, of course, when this was brought up, and like I said in this thread that someone else wrote, when it was brought up, of course, it's always been drawn that way, or, you know, this isn't a problem. There are Black women that look like this, and Black women who wear yoga pants. And you're missing the point. You're missing the point that this is an ongoing theme in comics, where this happens for other characters that are not Black, but that's not what I'm talking about right now. As a Black woman, I'm talking about Black characters, Black women characters right now. And it's just always this extra. Like, I don't know if you guys are familiar, but I think for Heroes for Hire, there was a cover for World War Hulk that was the Heroes for Hire cover. I don't remember what issue it was, but, you know, Misty, Colleen, and two other women were on the cover, and it looked damn near like tentacle porn. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, what is the purpose of that? There really is no purpose of that other than, you know, adolescent male gaze or really grown ass male gaze. So you got that going on, and it's just, I don't know. Look, I understand that the big two are going to big two when they do, and that's fine. But if they're going to continue to want, if they're going to continue to draw black bodies, then they're going to continue to need to have their feet held to the fire, because no, like, you know, I can make my own, support others that are, you know, doing the best that they can when it comes to comics and a great source of diversity and inclusion, support that, as well as critique Marvel, DC, and sometimes Image when Image fucks up at the same time. So, I mean, you know, it's, there has been worse, of course. I've seen worse. How Storm looked in that panel is, yeah, no, it made me go, you know, okay, well, what's going on? And unfortunately, that's something that, I mean, I pay a lot more attention to, and especially pay more attention to since Missy Knight's Uninformed Afro, because, like, it's, you know, there's a trend. There's been a trend for a while. So, hey. I mean, you know, if it doesn't bother you, it doesn't bother you. But if it does bother somebody else, you know, that's not really cool to just go ahead and smack that someone's feelings and invalidate them because, you know, it's either always been that way or, you know, that's how it is in real life. But okay, that's fine. But in what context does this serve the story? And for me, I didn't feel like this served any context. So that was that. And then, you see, this is why. The only reason why I'm reading Marvel is partly because of Misty Knight's Uninformed Afro and just, yeah, partly really mainly because of that. So I read Invincible Iron Man 5 because I've really, really, really been trying to give that comic a try. And I don't know how long this is going to last. Probably won't last very long because I read this and there were a couple panels that just kind of left a really bad taste in my mouth. So I'm going to read directly from them and just kind of describe to you all what's going on. So in one of the pages in Invincible Iron Man 5, we are treated to Riri's mother just kind of talking to some of the Iron Man equipment that Riri has in has left in the garage or whatever. And she's just kind of talking out loud. And I'm pretty sure she knows that nobody's really there to listen to her, but she just, you know, talking out loud. And at one point she says, "I can't say to a girl like her, you're grounded no more. You're not allowed to try to be a superhero and make the cesspool of a world a better place. Even though it has taken everything she has loved from her, she still wants to protect it. Who does that?" Now, yeah, it's a comic, but that left a bad taste in my mouth because lately, or maybe I'm sure that it's been this way for a while, but just really lately, this ongoing theme of Black women saving a world that easily discards us, easily forgets us, easily neglects us, easily always asks us to put everyone else before ourselves. And I don't know, reading that kind of triggered that because, I mean, that's a very real thing. And it's just like, if you aren't familiar with the Invincible Iron Man current run that's going on with Bendis writing for Riri, like, not just her stepfather was killed by gun violence, but also her friend and also her biological dad. So she's got a lot of shit going on. And I don't know. It's just, as a white man writing that, I can see how he wouldn't have taken all of the other nuances into consideration as to why the way what he wrote and how he wrote it could probably come off as, you know, just tiresome. Because like I said, you know, Black women were just constantly being tasked with saving everything and everything. And then this is, again, this is a superhero comic, so there's going to be saving involved. But I don't know, just the way that that was written, to me, there was a lack of full understanding of the context of the context behind that. And I'm gonna probably continue to read just to kind of see where he's going with this. But to be honest, Bendis is writing this comic exactly how I thought he would. And on the surface, there's a Black girl who is Iron Man, but she's missing something, missing a lot of something. And it's, I don't know, it's showing and it's annoying. And I hope that, if this comic continues, that someone else is takes over and is able to write for her, because this, again, really could have been a coming of age story with an authentic voice behind it. And by authentic, I mean a Black woman behind writing for a young 15-year-old girl who has taken over the mantle of such a well-known superhero and trying to deal with that and dealing with the world that has taken so much from you, but at the same time, not letting that beat you down and wanting to make the world a better place. So, I don't know, I just, when I read that, it felt empty. Like it didn't come from it. It just felt like the same old rhetoric that I'm hearing constantly over and over and over and over again, that Black women are to save the world. But no, fuck that. What if we have other shit to do? So I don't know, maybe I shouldn't have read that before having coffee or whatever, but that's just when you read, it evokes feelings, right? So that evoked that out of me. Now, I feel like it's valid because that's the way that I feel, but you know, that's just something that rode me the wrong way. So then I continued to read the comic, and then I got towards the end, and basically, S.H.I.E.L.D. comes because Pepper Potts. I am blanking on her name right now, so don't crucify me. But her suit has been low-jacked. And so when everything that's going down happens, I don't want to give it too much away, but everything that's going on happens. And then I guess S.H.I.E.L.D. is notified, and then they come and they, after everything is Riri and Pepper have pretty much handled everything, they come in and, you know, do S.H.I.E.L.D. shit. So another panel. So in this one, you know, you pretty much have one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents talking to both Riri and, is it Piper? Why am I thinking it's Piper Potts? Miss Potts, because this is what I'm going to say right now, because I can't think of whether it's Pepper or Piper, and I feel like, I'm probably mixing that up with Orange is New Black. I should know. But anyways, they're talking, and then, you know, she's just like, oh, is this the Tony Stark project or whatever? Just referring to, you know, Riri or whatever. And then she finally says her name, and it's just a lot of, back and forth. And then, you know, she's like, oh, you're only 15. And she's like, well, maybe we should recruit you. And then Riri's just like, no. And then she just says, well, you must be a big Hydra fan. So Riri goes off, which she should have went off, and just like, no, just because I have a valid criticism of the way that you guys handle things does not mean that I'm automatically for Hydra. It just means I have criticisms of the way you guys handle stuff. So she says that, and then she pretty much tells Pepper that she's going to talk to her later and kind of gets ready to pretty much walk off or whatever. And then this woman says to Pepper, like, yeah, she needs to learn. She needs to learn respect. So that also rubbed me the wrong way, because here's this white woman who comes in and isn't really necessarily even acknowledging Riri. And then when she finds out her age and how smart she is and so on and so forth, all of a sudden, then she wants to recruit her as an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then Riri is just like, no. So then it's just automatically, well, you must be, you know, a fan of Hydra. And it's just still like, no, what the hell are you talking about? I have valid criticisms of the way you do things. It doesn't automatically mean that I'm not also in agreement in some of the stuff you do. And then, you know, just her saying that she needs to learn respect or whatever. And I feel like there really could have been a moment to speak to just the way white women interact with black women and vice versa. And I feel like Bendis either accidentally kind of touched on that or knowingly touched on that, but I almost feel like it's accidental for him. And once again, if there was a black woman writing this comic, that was a moment that really could have been taken up a step further. So I don't know, guys. I just am really trying with this comic just because I know for younger readers coming in, them seeing, you know, Riri and also Nella, like we just talked about on Misty Knight's Uninformed Afro, how important these two characters are for younger readers. And but I guess at the same time, you know, I shouldn't have to disregard iffy writing or the way that it's written just for that. So I don't know, this is complicated. It's layered, it's complicated, and it's not black and white. So it's a lot to kind of sort through and deal with. So moving on from that, some more upbeat news as far as comics go. The Blurred Girl posted an article, I believe, a few days ago, and it lists, you know, 16 diverse webcomics that she's currently reading. Actually, some of them I'm actually reading too. Mildred Lewis's Agents of the Rim, which I love. And if you guys haven't, go support her. It's actually a really great comic. And it's, I got it for $15 on her site. So definitely check out Agents of the Rim. And then also Bounce by Chuck Collins, which Bounce by Chuck Collins always get tagged to some of the panels that he posts sometimes on Twitter, and I always enjoy them. But yeah, if you get a chance, check that out. And I'll have links to both the Blurred Girls article as well as a link to Agents of the Realm and also a link to Chuck's website, bouncecomics.com. So I'll post that in the show notes so you guys can go and check that out and hopefully check out some of the other comics that she lists in her article. So moving on just to TV and movie news, Iron Fist. I don't want to talk about it that much more because, I mean, we've been talking about it at length for almost 3 weeks now, but I'm doing recaps for Patreon subscribers of The Lemonade. I just uploaded episode 1 of that, which features me recapping episodes 1 and 2. Ooh. It's a doozy. So if you want to hear me kind of suffer through that, you definitely, just for $5, you can hear those episodes. Actually, the first episode I actually made available to all Patreon subscribers at any dollar amount. But for the rest of them, they will be for the $5 patrons of The Lemonade. So there's that. And then one more thing on Iron Fist creator. You know, he said in an interview with Inverse, I think, or Verge, that, you know, Iron Fist was never meant to be Oriental, as though he's a damn rug. And then he even says, like, he knows that that wasn't the correct word to use, but he still said it. You know, how convenient is whiteness where you can know that a word is incorrect to describe a marginalized group of people, to describe people of color, but still use it anyway and just shrug it off. The audacity. And then, I mean, for the longest, a lot of people have been saying that, you know, Iron Fist is a problematic character and people swear up and down that it is not. But, I mean, the creator himself is problematic. So you can't tell me that some of that does not seep into the creation of the actual character. I mean, hell, to be quite honest, Iron Fist, Luke Cage, Misty Knight, Colleen Wing, all of them are all characters that are, to a degree, very, very time capsule-y and just, I don't know, victims of the time where they were created. Like, they're very, like, dated in that way. And to bring those characters on the screen and not to update them in their stories in any way, shape, or form is almost foolish, because if you don't do that for Luke Cage and Misty Knight, you get blaxploitation. You end up watching Black Dynamite is what you end up watching. I think Chael understood that with Luke Cage, and it's probably a reason why he went the direction he did. I'm happy that he did, at least for Misty Knight, because if he would have brought the Misty Knight directly from the comics, one wouldn't know who the hell she was, because we've already discussed this in Misty Knight's uninformed afro. And then two, you know, she just would have been talking jive the whole time, which would have been a problem because it's 2017. So I don't know, like for those characters, for anybody who has a lick of sense, it just makes sense to update them and their stories into the 21st century to put on the screen, as well in the comics as well. So I don't know, that's just something to keep in mind. But as of right now, what I have seen from the Iron Fist episodes is that the writing itself kind of suffers. The fighting is like slog, just kind of going through the motions. And from what I read, Finn Jones said he only had really 15 minutes to prepare before these fight scenes. So, and it shows. It really, really shows a lot. So, I mean, yeah. So that is enough about Iron Fist. Wow. on to more. So Netflix was like, well, we're getting heat from Iron Fist, so let's drop another gem. And they dropped the trailer for Death Note, which people have been, it falls right in line with Ghost in the Shell with the whitewashing, because it's an American remake with a mostly white cast. And you know who white folks were really upset about? L being black. Right. Not like Yagami or any, just L being black. And I found it funny that the Cannon Bros were nowhere to be found in any of this, only except to bring up L. So I don't get it. You know, at the very least, if you are going to remake something and quote unquote Americanize it, and I don't understand why everything has to be Americanized, and also don't understand how Americanized defaults to white. Because of course there's people who had stuff to say. I believe the director of Alien Covenant, I think his name is Scott, put his foot in his mouth and was, I guess, making comments on Death Note or whatever. And, you know, other Asians were telling him to just, like, you don't know what you're talking about right now. You should probably just stay in your lane. And he got all upset and went on this, well, I can't talk about anything because I'm not it. And it's just, no, it's, you should probably, if it's something is just not in your lane, it's better to probably just amplify those voices who, you know, live that experience and have more of a personal, I don't know, like a personal thing to say about it versus just driving in someone else's lane to just center yourself, because it's usually what ends up happening when you comment on stuff that really isn't in your lane. You end up centering yourself because it's not in your lane. So of course he got up in arms and mad, and it's just, come on, really? Yeah, and just, what are y'all doing? So Death Note's happening, and yeah, more whitewashing continues. And all right, and oh, wow, this has just been a month of whitewash. I mean, a month of just, or a year of just white people in all the roles. So CBS cast two white leads for Andy Weir's sci-fi drama Mission Control, and CBS has gotten heat before too about their lack of diversity and inclusion, and they swore up and down they're going to change that, but receipts say otherwise. So for this show, Mission Control, it was written with a bilingual Latina and often also an African-American man. So one of the white leads, his name, the name of the character is Malik Stevenson. I really hope they keep it the same. Like, they don't change the name. They don't change it to Michael. They don't change it to anything. Like, they keep it Malik so that we can see just how bad CBS is when it comes to casting people of color. Like, I just want them to, because that's how ridiculous it is. So I really hope they don't change the name and it's some white guy walking around on Mission Control named Malik Stevenson. I really hope they keep it the same. And it's okay. So finally, much better news. So instead of watching Iron Fist opening weekend, I decided to finally watch Into the Badlands, which I hadn't checked out at the time because I don't think I had cable. So I don't think that's why I wasn't watching it. And I really didn't know about Sling at the time, but life's changed. I have Sling. So that's how I watch my AMC shows. Into the Badlands is good. And I don't say that as, oh, well, it's better than Iron. No, it's actually, it's good. It's great. It's really good storytelling. You're pretty much following Sunny, who is played by Daniel Wu. And he's the main character, our vehicle for this. And then, of course, there are other characters involved, but Sunny. And then I was like, oh, he's in a relationship with a black woman named Vale, and she is a doctor, pretty much. So that's pretty dope. The Barons remind me of, some of them remind me of slave masters to a degree, especially Quinn, who is Sunny's Baron. So there's a lot going on. There's only six episodes for season one, which makes things, I feel like that gives for a tighter storytelling and is not really getting drawn out. So it was actually a very, very quick binge. I was able to do it in 2 days. So I was trying to savor it a little bit. I really could have did it in 1 day, but did it in 2 days. But if you haven't checked out Into the Badlands, you should. Season two just started last week. And hey, one of the masters who is, what is the boy's, MK, who is, MK has been taken, and he is, I guess, trying to learn how to master his power that he has. When he gets cut, he turns into something and becomes the ultimate fighter, pretty much. And he's trying to learn how to rein that in. And his master, guess what she is? A woman of color. So if you're looking for meaningful diversity and inclusion, I would definitely check out Into the Badlands. And also the martial arts and the fight choreography, it's really, really good. Like, it's good. So definitely check out Into the Badlands if you're looking for something to watch. And, you know, Iron Fist didn't really do it for you. In other news, Zazie Beetz has been cast as Domino. First off, that's a bomb ass name. And then two, I don't know when we're going to get Atlanta season two. They say 2018, but I feel like that is a lie because everybody from that show is blowing up, and kudos to them. I am happy for them that they are, but I don't know if we're going to get Atlanta season two. I may say 2018, but I don't see it. But she was cast as Domino, and there was some concept art that was released, and one of them that I seen, they have her skin is still black, which is cool. She's got a white ring around her eye instead, and she's rocking a natural fro. Now, if they end up going with that, and that's what I see in the trailer, I will buy my ticket that day if it is available. So I'll be seeing Deadpool on opening day, that Thursday night, whatever, if that ends up happening. And I really, really hope it does. And Tessa Thompson is, of course, in Thor 3, and the only reason why I'm kind of seeing Thor 3. And also, Tessa Thompson and Gina Rodriguez are in an upcoming movie that is called Annihilation. It is book one of a trilogy by Jeff Vandermeer. And if you haven't read it, I actually do recommend it. I love that trilogy. It creeped me the hell out. I actually got it on Audible. So as I was listening to it, I was like kind of looking over my shoulder the entire time because it's just creepy as hell. So if you haven't, I would check that out, but I'm looking forward to this movie, and that's another movie that looks pretty, it's a sci-fi. I guess I would categorize that as sci-fi horror. I would, but that'll be coming out soon. I think either this year or definitely next year. So, you know, just be on the lookout for that. Remake City, Matrix. I think they're thinking about remaking that, and I'm open to that idea to a degree because just the first Matrix movie really left it open to anybody could be the one. And then Matrix 2 and 3, for whatever reason, they kind of went the Christian route. And, you know, by the end of 3, Neo was like a Jesus-like figure. So if they can go back to what they were playing around with in the first Matrix, I'm all for that. If it's possibly, you know, a backstory to Morpheus, I'm down for that. So I'm not as opposed to a Matrix quote-unquote remake as I thought I was, is actually sit down and think about it. So I don't know, depending on how they go about doing it, then I could potentially be up for it. I think either Eddie Murphy tweeted out about Coming to America 2. That is something too that I can also potentially be, you know, up for, depending on how they do it. So I mean, y'all remaking and redoing everything, y'all, so why not? So speaking, I should have said this while I was talking about Iron Fist, but I just thought about it. Louis Tan and Lexi Alexander have a movie that they've been putting together, that they've been tweeting about. I know Louis has been tweeting about it. It's called Fireborn. So it looks really interesting from what I've seen from the still shots and all of that. So I'm looking forward to that whenever it's out and it's available. That'd be something I'll be watching. And last but not least, Train to Busan is on Netflix. If you're not familiar with that movie, it is a South Korean zombie movie. I thought I was over zombies, like I had zombie fatigue, but I really enjoyed that movie the first time I watched. I watched it again once I found out it was on Netflix, and it's still so good. So I really feel like we should have a live tweet of that soon. I don't know, even if I'll do the damn live tweet myself, that's how good it is. I really think if you haven't, check it out. I think you'll like it. The ending is pretty messed up, but you know, it's different. I like it. So one last thing before I cut to the interview that I have with Maya Crown Williams. If you're not familiar with her, she is the creator of MechaCon. So I hope you guys enjoy that interview. But Liz the Movie Girl and I, we do Let Go, Let Flow, which is our podcast where we cover girlfriends episodes. We've been starting from season one. We're getting ready to go into season two. We're actually going to start a live tweet of the show. So if you want to join us, that actually starts Monday, which is March 27th. And that'll be at 8 p.m. Eastern. We're starting from season two. And you can find girlfriends episodes on YouTube. And also the CWC, where you can also find that Vixen cartoon, which is pretty much like Vixen commercials, but no shade, all the shade, but you can find the episodes there. So join us. We'll be doing that every Monday, two episodes a Monday until we finish season two. And also we'll be recapping the episodes on the podcast. So be on the lookout for that. And I think that's it, guys. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview, and I'll catch you on the flip side of it.
Hey everyone, I'm Courtney Hinton of Verve House Collective, and you should join me over on the Get Verved podcast. On the Get Verved podcast, we discuss creativity, how to fit creativity into your busy life, and leading a life or business with intention. I often have other guests on the show to talk about these things with me as we get to the bottom of this whole living your passion thing. The Get Verved podcast is part of Verve House Collective, and I cannot wait to sit down with you in the digital coffee house.
Hey guys, thank you for joining me for another episode of the Lemonade Podcast. This is a special part of the podcast. I've been trying to do a lot better about having guests on the show, and today I have Miss Maya Crown Williams. And if you aren't familiar with her, you kind of should be. She is the creator and founder of MechaCon, which I'll break it down for you. That's the Midwest Ethnic Convention for Comics and Art, and that's usually held in Detroit. And she's also the founder and creator of BSAM, and I'll break that down for you too. And that's a Black Speculative Arts arts movement. So, Maya, how are you doing?
I'm great. Just really busy, but I'm actually great. And I really appreciate you welcoming your show.
Oh, no problem at all. So, at first, I always usually like to ask people, so what is your origin story? You don't have to go all the way back to, you know, being in the fetal position, but, you know, just kind of let us know, where things started for you. What was your inspiration behind starting MechaCon and also BSAM? And, you know, just let us know.
Well, my origin story is having a child. My origin story, like I tell everyone in all interviews, is me having a son. My son is very heavy into comics. He's very heavy into speculative fiction, sci-fi, all of that. Very heavy into it. So I wanted to see what I could do to make sure that the stuff he was reading and absorbing also was about him and looked like him. And I wanted to see if it was any that were written and drawn by people that looked like him. So that's my origin story.
Okay, and that's actually one that I was a little familiar with, but I just want the folks to know. But I found that not only, I don't know, because often you don't hear about parents all the time being so involved with some of their children's hobbies to that degree where they go above and beyond trying to make sure that they're getting everything that they desire as far as representation goes. So I thought that was amazing. Right. And to have something like MechaCon birthed out of that is great.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem at all. So I know, I think this past weekend you actually had a BSAM event in Texas. Is that correct?
Yes, we had a BSAM event at Prairie View A&M University.
And how did that, really well, nice. I know. Our smaller great.
Event. Oh, it went great.
Okay.
It went great. Great. It went great. Yeah, we have smaller events and then we have really large events. And BSAM Texas was one of our smaller events, but the students were so engaged all weekend. It was just really wonderful. The students were very engaged in our panelists and workshops and lectures and presentations, and especially the film festival. So they really enjoyed it. And we definitely appreciated the opportunity of being here. And I also graduated from Prairie View. So it all was, you know, it was a wonderful experience.
Oh, nice. Okay. All right. Now I want to ask, so as far as, promoting Black creatives, what do you feel, MechaCon and also, BCA, BC, I'm sorry. I can't speak tonight. Yeah. BSAM, yes. Yeah. You know, how do you, and I know it does, but like, just coming from your own words, how do you feel its importance for Black creatives and just the platform that you provide?
I think it's very important. It's not only important for fans, but I feel like it's important for the youth. I feel like it's extremely important for the youth. We have a lot of people that throw conventions for a lot of reasons. I myself and a few other people I know, like, I do it for the babies. Like, that's my whole entire focus. I do it for the future and the building foundation of my community. So whatever I can do to provide structure in my community as far as mental and creativity, then that's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. So that was the entire reason why I felt it was important for me to contribute my services to the comic book community as a whole, and especially the Black comics community.
Now, I know like something like a convention can sound very daunting to people as far as, you know, really just starting one and getting one off the ground and the support. Could you talk a little about that? Just because I know that that's something that a lot of people are interested in. Where it seems to be that way is what I've seen on social media. You know, what was that process like?
Well, the beginning was rough. The beginning was money. I was spending all of my little pennies out of my little dusty wallet and doing everything for myself, by myself, and literally with myself. So the first year of MechaCon was probably the roughest as far as a feasible standpoint. Organizing, I've always been an excellent organizer, and I have a degree in business management. And, you know, I've always felt like being an executive assistant, that with event planning, it should go hand in hand. So when I started doing events, even before the Comic-Cons, when I started being an event plan, I felt like I was pretty good at it. So then I decided to start working with someone else in the Detroit area. And I worked with his Comic-Cons for years. And then I decided to branch on my own. And I was first working with someone else with his. And I was like, you know what? I think I can do this just a smidgen better than this brother is doing it. And I feel like everything evolves through energy. and it's the type of energy and type of spirit that you have on how your event is going to happen. So,
yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Especially if you go into something feeling as though it's going to be, you know, the work that you're putting into it, then usually that manifests itself. So, yeah, I definitely agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
So the type of panels that you all have at, you know, MechCon, is that, can you just talk a little about that as far as like, or actually the panels that you had last year?
Oh yeah, the panels we had last year were great. We had our Women in Comics. We had our Women in Comics panel, Official Women in Comics, with the founder, Regine Sawyer, who is a very close friend of mine. And it was wonderful. And then we had the BSAM panel, actually, at MechaCon, the Black Speculative Arts Movement. And that was wonderful as well. And we got to have a lot of people from Michigan participate in it. And we have a lot of prolific Afrofuturism scholars and artists from the Michigan area. So it actually worked out great, including Adrienne Marie Brown, Onyx Ashanti, and a few other people, Dr. Tanya Lawrence. It was a really nice panel, also, and very well received. We also, that was the birthplace for the Back to Black Acceptance versus Accuracy versus Acceptance panel. That's our new panel series that we're taking around with all MechaCon and all BSAM conventions, and it is our Black Comics panel. So Tony Patrick and I founded it, and we decided mm-hmm. to pitch it to New York Comic Con. They didn't think we were special enough, so we were like, fuck it, and we took it everywhere else. So that's how we're like just branding it at our own stuff. Am I allowed to cuss? Because I cuss a lot, and I'm trying to be politically correct while I'm on your interview, so I'm like, let me watch my
girl. You listen to the limit, you've heard good. Me drop a F. I've dropped several F-bombs, so you're good.
Okay. I'm sorry, but yeah, so we yeah. decided to.
No, you're fine. No, let your hair down. You are fine.
Yeah. We decided, I didn't even comb my hair tonight. That's why I'm happy this is audio, not video. But yeah, we decided to take our panel to our own event. And hopefully we will be able to get to New York Comic Con. But if we don't get it to New York Comic Con this year, we still rise and fly. So we're good to go. So we had, that was the first place that we had the Back to Black panel at. And then we've had it at a few BSAMs as well. And then we have it at a few panels that are coming up also. And we always have prolific people on each one. So we're really excited about the Back to Black series.
Cool. All right. And actually, do you mind, because I've noticed that you guys have grown infinitely over the years. So instead of just being in Detroit, we're just in Texas. Where else are you guys going to be this year?
Well, last year we had BSAM in St. Louis, where it was birthed. It was at another HBCU called Harris Stowe State University in St. Louis, and we're also having it again. We're also having that same one again next month. March 17th and 18th. We also have it every year in Canada. We got it in Toronto at OK University. That event was huge. It was absolutely beautiful. Our Canadian affiliate, Quentin Versetti, who's an Afrofuturism scholar as well as an Afrofuturism artist, he's very, very outstanding. He did an absolutely wonderful job at OK. And we are so, like, Dr. Anderson and I, he's a co-founder of BSAM. Dr. Renato Anderson. We were so proud of Quentin. We were just like, we got there and we were just like, this is absolutely beautiful. It's so much culture in Toronto. I cannot wait to return. We had it in Philly. We had it at Temple University via Dr. Malefi Ashanti. So we were extremely honored to have it at Temple with him. So, and then, of course, we just had it. Of course, we have it in Detroit, MechaCon. Every year at Detroit Public Library, which is one of the oldest libraries in the United States, and it's a gorgeous building. And then we had it in Texas this past weekend, of course, at another HBCU, Prairie View A&M. We have it in April in the Bronx at the Bronx Museum of the Arts, and that event is about to be steroid size. I mean, the lineup for the one in the Bronx is insane. And then we have it in Oakland at California State University East Bay. And that's via Dr. Lonnie A. Brooks. And that event is wonderful because it's so much African culture, it's so much Latino culture in Oakland. So we're really excited about that. And the student body is really participating heavily at that one. And then we also have it in LA in June. And that's the one I'm almost taking over and getting on my business partner's nerves, because that's about to be like 90% film because we're in LA. So we're really working heavily with my MechaCon International Film Festival with that. So we'll have a lot of Q&A panels and a lot of films with that, a lot of horror, speculative fiction, everything with the one in LA. And this and this with Ben Caldwell. And we're having it at Leimert Village. So we're going to be in like 3-4 different locations there. So it's like really, really, really nice. So we're just excited. We're just really excited. We just today signed a few hours ago with Georgia State University. So we'll be in Georgia State, February 2018. And we'll be back in Toronto again in October. This is a lot going on. So, you know, we're just really excited and we're getting this ball moving past, and we're trying to keep it up, keep it moving, because that's literally what it is. It's a movement, and we're trying to honor that word.
No, for sure y'all are, because I mean, you're covering East Coast, West Coast, and the North. So, and South too. So, I mean, that's definitely what's up. And yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate that... No, I was just going to say that it's unfortunate that New York Comic Con didn't, you know, come to their senses and want to have, you know, to have your panel on. But I mean, unfortunately, when somebody won't open the door, no, fuck them. Go ahead and build your own shit and kick it in. So, yeah. So
it would be wonderful to have it there, though. But I mean, if we don't, it is what it is. Because, you know, Tony Patrick, who it was actually his idea to do it. I just helped him a lot with it. And I'm the vehicle for getting it moving in multiple conventions and stuff. Like, when he can't come, I definitely take the wheel on that. But like, we are very focused. We're very focused on branding the Back to Black panel. You know, we're excited about it, and you know, we just can't wait to see where it goes. Like, we'll have another one in St. Louis next month. We're having it in the Bronx. We're definitely having it in LA. So, you know, we're having it again in Detroit. You know, it's just a really good thing, and we're definitely proud of that panel.
That's amazing. And I know, well, hopefully my coins are straight. I do actually have all the intentions of coming to MechaCon in Detroit. We visit family all the time in Chicago, at least once a year, because it's where I'm originally from. So, and Chicago's 4 hours away. So I'm trying to plan a trip around there, because I definitely want to be there in it. Yeah. Okay. Well, Maya, I would love to. I've seen the pictures online. It looks gorgeous, and it's nothing like being surrounded by, you know, those that share the experience as you and also enjoy some of the same things that you do. And the cosplay looks like it's off the chain there too. So that would be a sight to behold, honestly and truly.
Yeah, we're definitely trying to get more cosplay at MechaCon. So we are actually having a cosplay. We're incorporating a lot with cosplay this year. We're just really excited about a lot of stuff. Period. So you know, it's very overwhelming. I know Sister Geek proposed that we had either a panel or a workshop in Detroit this year with MechaCon. So you know, we're definitely looking forward to her and Aisha Little working on that together. So, and she's over a lot of steampunk events and steampunk panels, and she also has her own Comic-Con in Ohio. There's a lot of sisters out here doing a lot of stuff. We just don't get recognition for it. But, you know, whatever. We're trying to make it out here.
Well, no, well, then that needs to change, because people all the time say things like, well, you all should be out there doing your own. But the thing is that we are. You like just aren't taking the time out to look. Yeah. So I just had this conversation the other day. I feel like I have this conversation every damn day, to be honest. But no, it's being done. Just people don't take time out to put in the work. To look for it, that is, because people are putting in the work to make it happen and have that representation there. So, no, you're right. All right, Maya, well, I don't want to hold you long, because I know that you are a very, very busy woman, but can you please let my listeners know where they can find you on the interwebs, website information, and also any dates that you have for upcoming events? Please let them know. And then I'll have this information up, guys, under the SoundCloud and also on the Lemonade website that should be up by the time that you listen to this. So if you miss it when she says it, then don't worry. I got you.
Okay. MeccaCon, as far as MeccaCon, our website is MeccaCon.wordpress.com, MeccaCon. We have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. The handle is MeccaCon. We have BSAM, Black Speculative Arts Movement, on Facebook, or Twitter and Instagram, BSAM Convention. We're basically everywhere that's free. We have a Tumblr under MeccaCon, but all the MeccaCon and the BSAM stuff. We have Pinterest under MeccaCon. Like whatever is a login that's free that I can hustle on, that's where you can find me at. You can email me at bsamstaff@gmail.com, bsamstaff@gmail.com. Tables for all of our events.
And so basically, also, if you didn't catch that, Google is your friend. So just go ahead and type in MeccaCon, because I'm pretty sure some will pop up.
And all right, Maya.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. All the tables for our events are on sale now. They're only $75. You can email me. You can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, all of that good stuff. Our next showing will be March 17th and 18th at the HBCU, known as Harris Stowe State University in St. Louis. Then April 22nd will be in the Bronx. May 13th will be in California, Oakland, at Cal State U, East Bay. And June, we will be in L.A. at Lamarck Village Park, the whole facility, the whole area. We're taking over that, and that is June 25th. And Detroit, we will be in Detroit, September 16th at Detroit Public Library. And you can find all of our tickets and info online, so.
All right. I hope y'all caught that. If not, once again, I gotcha. I'll have all this information ready to go for you to click and for you to support. And they're all over the place. So, you know, there's an event close to you. So if you get a chance, please go out and support. And Maya, I just want to thank you so much for reaching out, because I actually wanted to ask you for a little bit if you would mind coming on. Because like I said, this year I've been trying to get more people on, trying to do my best that I can to just promote us, because we definitely need that. So. Oh, no problem at all. And anytime, just please ask. I am a DM away. So, guys, this has been another special, I don't know what I want to call this, but yeah, one day I'll come up with a name for this part of the Lemonade Show. But there's been another special episode for you all. So please support. I can't stress that enough. And I'll catch you all later. Okay, guys, well, this has been, I guess, the conclusion of another episode of the Lemonade Podcast. I hope you all have enjoyed, and I'm going to talk to you guys in 2 weeks. But in the meantime, if you haven't already and the spirit moves you, like I said, there is a Patreon for the Lemonade. I'm actually doing Iron Fist recaps on there and posting them. So if you're interested, just check it on out, and I'll catch you guys later. Thanks for joining me. Bye.